The big thing I remember the most about growing up as a child was kindergarten. Now, to me, the only thing, kindergarten, the only good thing about it is that it teaches you how to say goodbye to your parents without crying. That's all. After that, forget it. They got nothing else for you to do. I remember standing in that schoolyard with 27 snowsuits on and my idiot mittens, you know. The idiot mittens are the ones with the string that go up your arm and around your neck. And the only cool thing about it is if you talk in the left hand, you can listen in the right.
Hello? How'd you been? Yes, all right, fine.
Find another kid with idiot mittens on, you run up, you pull his left mitten, and he smacks himself in the face with the right. Yeah, I used to love to do that, boy. And we all stood in that line crying, oh, where are we going? We're going to die. You're going to get us killed. And the next day, I was very cool. Goodbye, mother. Take care of yourself, won't you, dear? I should be home, 12:30, 12:45, somewhere around there. Might be late. I may have a little milk with the boys, you know what I mean? Tell Dad I'll see him around dinner time. Now, once they get you inside, they're lost. They got nothing for you to do because you're only five and you're too dumb to care about anything else. They try, though, you know. What I wanted to do. Yeah, that's right, yeah. Right, yeah, cool, man. What I wanted to do, yeah, right. What's a two? You don't care, man. So then, she takes... So then... Hey, they try these other things, basic things. No chairs in kindergarten. Everything's done on the floor. Sit on the floor, stand on the floor, you go huddle on the floor so you can look at each other. Little ugly kids with pointed heads. And you beat time to Mozart. Ta-dun-da-dun-pum, ta-dun-da-dun-pum. How long do we have to keep this up? I don't know. Go another 10 minutes, we'll beat her to death with these sticks, all right? Then she says, okay, children, it's time for a snack. Great! Now you're talking! Yeah, snack! I want a Hershey bar! Me too! Give me a baby Ruth! Right! No such luck. She brought out a box and gave us each an old dried up, brown, nasty tasting, gag you, stick in the throat graham cracker. And you gotta pray for something to wash it down. Please, we're gonna die if you don't give us something soon. We got the hiccups and everything. Please! She said, certainly. Went over and got a case of milk that's been sitting on the radiator for about 80 years. Nothing in the world better for a bunch of five-year-old kids than good old lukewarm, curdly milk. Yes, sir, we loved it. And the straws in kindergarten are the worst things in the world. Worst straws I've ever seen. They're good for one suck. You and that's it. Flat as a piece of paper. You're sitting up there. Then to top it off, she says, okay, it's time for a nap. Yeah, there's nobody in the world anymore wide awake at 11 o'clock in the morning and a bunch of five-year-old kids. 23 kids on 23 cots sleeping, wide awake. Only one sleeping is the teacher. She's gone.
Thank God for this break, boy. I'm telling you that.
I graduated from that into the first grade. I always wanted to get into the first grade because you have your own desk in the first grade, and that's just a part of being cool, man. Yeah, because I remember there was one guy that was just as old as the rest of us, and his name was Richard, man. Richard was cool because he had his own desk. They skipped Richard because he could tie his own tie, you know. Yeah. They used to bring him up before the assembly progress, and the president of the school say, all right, we will now have Richard tie his tie for you.
Yeah, yes, yeah. Go, Rich, yeah. Yeah.
Rich was cool, man. We used to pass by the room, man, and peep into first grade and see them all in there sitting at their desk. You can see Rich. We try to make Rich laugh. We make faces at him. Hey, Rich! Rich scared to laugh because he get a beating, you know. Now I got my own desk. Ta-dum! I love this desk. Of course, they all look alike, but I got to find out how to find my own. Of course, I don't want anybody to know that I'm not cool finding my desk. I sit down at my desk, look around. I know this is my desk because I sit in front of Crying Charlie. Crying Charlie's got the coolest cry in the world, man. You can't hardly hear him or nothing. He just opens up his mouth and tears roll down his face and everything, man. I know this is it because I sit in front of him. So every time I come into the room, I just look for Crying Charlie and I sit right in front of him. Of course, if Crying Charlie's absent, I don't know where I'm going to sit. You know. Crying Charlie's absent, I go to his house and sit in front of him. Yeah, got to fold my hands on top of the desk so the teacher will know what I'm doing. Got some initials on the top of the desk here. Somebody carved them all the way through to the floor. So when you write on your paper, you rip it. Yeah. Got an inkwell.
Yeah, boy.
They still don't trust us, though. No ink in it. Afraid we'll drink it. And I would, too, man. Ink is cool to drink, boy. Hey, drink ink about 325, go home with a blue tongue. Used to make my mother faint. Ma, yeah, look. My mother was cool, man. She would faint for anything, boy. I used to get hit in the head with a rock, cover up the blood, wait till I get right up on her. Ma, look. Wow. Way to go, Ma. Cool, yeah. She got me back one day, though. I was playing with my navel.
Yeah. Oh, navel, navel.
My mother said, all right, keep playing with your navel. Pretty soon you're going to break it wide open. The air is going to come right out of your body. You'll fly around the room backwards for 30 seconds. Land, you'll be flat as a piece of paper. Nothing but your little eyes bugging out. Keep it up. I used to carry Band-Aids with me in case I'd have an accident. Gonna learn to write in the first grade now. They give you this paper, grade triple Z. Grade triple Z paper with wood still in it. Big hunks of wood still floating around in it. You gotta write around the hunks of wood. And the lines are about 8 feet apart. They don't want you to miss getting in between them lines, man. Don't want you to start crying. They give you these pencils as big as a horse's leg. And you rest them on your shoulder as you write.
A, B,
may I have another piece of paper, please? I will. I learned the correct procedure for going to the bathroom in the first grade. You just don't raise your hand and, you know, say, may I be excused? You have to let one finger go up. If you want to do one thing, you want to do anything else, you have to let it see two fingers. In case of a tie, two wins out over one. For the longest time, I told the truth. If I had to go, you're one. And then one day it hit me. I was in the bathroom playing the soap dish game. 7-0, favor me. And it hit me, now, but she got to know what I'm in here doing for. It's none of her business whether I'm one in it or two in it. That's why they put doors on the bathroom so nobody will know if you're one in it or two in it in here. And it's not bad enough that the teacher knows I'm one in it. The whole class knows I'm one in it. You go back in the classroom, people say, how was it? So I just started lying after that. You know, hey, if I had to one, they think I'm one in it. Yeah. Then I felt guilty and I'd go back and tell the truth. You know that one? Yes, it was really a two. She wrote it down in her book, Bill Cosby did 2 twos and 3 ones today. I got an A in bathroom going. Hot dog, junior high school. Watch out there. Personal hygiene, 8th grade. It's all I used to look forward to.
Pretty soon we'll be getting in there too, man.
Don't tell us about it, you'll ruin it. Yeah, boy. Never forget. I better ask all those dumb questions, man. Woo-wee. I remember junior high school was the first time. This may sound a little off color, but this is the truth. First time I ever wore jockstrap was junior high school, gym class. And there were some guys didn't know how to put it on. Some guys had it on backwards, you know. Really, it's the truth. We had one kid went out and bought two of them. Put on one for each leg, you know. And he put little pieces of rubber down. He thought they were to help you from hurting your hip if you bumped into anything. We made him a flagpole carrier, you know. Junior high school, shop, right? Do you go to, you have shop? Oh, I was the worst kid in shop ever, man. Anything I ever tried to make always turned out to be an ashtray. I'd mess it up, put two grooves in it. Why is it an ashtray? That's what it is. Looks like a whatnot shop to me. Well, I'd build them like that, you know, put two grooves in it. I couldn't even make a shoe shine box, put two grooves in it. Oh, a little ashtray there. How come you got polish in it? Well, it's different kinds, you know. Oh, I was the worst, man. And we had a shop teacher that was like a psychology Well, he was like, he had a little touch of psychology. See, in the first place, I went to school with kid killers or priests, you know. One way or the other, man. There was no middle of the road, nothing there, you know. And the great part about it was that we were in shop, and this guy, we had gotten rid of 5 shop teachers. And within about 3 months, man. And we had the kind of kids wear the hat sideways, you know, and they wouldn't stand up straight or nothing. And when they talked to you, they had about 12 toothpicks in the mouth, you know. And you'd say, "How are you?" "Third try, third try." And he said, "What is it?" He said, "Kill." And somebody found a 45 bullet. We were in a metal shop. And he put the bullet, the guy says, "Hey, you know, if you put a bullet in the furnace, it'll explode." That's it. This was the brightest one in our class. So everybody else said, "Clog up, clog up, clog up." And this one, you know, psych shop teacher, he could always get guys to confess by talking about their parents. He would degrade the parents, and then the kid would get angry. And we're sitting there, and everybody's tinkering away. Tink, 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 tink. And the bullet is in the furnace, you know. Tink, tink, tink. And it... Tink, 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 tink. So here he comes.
"All right. I put a bullet in the furnace. You know, you put a bullet in the furnace, that reflects on your parents." "You know, a guy, your mother must be pretty low down for you to put a bullet in the furnace."
So now it starts. "Hey, Larry, the guy's talking about your mother over there."
"Yeah, your mother's got to be pretty low down and rotten. Listen, I didn't put the bullet in the furnace and stop talking about my mother."
Oh, yeah, he was beautiful. It's great to be an expectant father. And I want to pass some things on to some of you guys. If you don't have children already, a woman really gets irritable when she's expecting, because of the simple fact that she feels everything's been dropped right on her. You see, now the man was just as much, you know, the fault as to what has happened, but nothing happens to him, you know, and the woman starts to get ugly. "I'm so ugly." And you know, the husband doesn't help any when he's, "Hey, look at what I did. Look at that, Charlie. How about that? Look at them goodies there. How about that? So, whee! How about me? I'm a man." So that's why when the husband says, "Hello, dear. No, you dear me. Get out of here. I'll punch you right in the mouth, you know." "Well, I'm going to have about 30 kids. My wife can't do a thing about it because she's Catholic. If she refuses me, I'll take her right to the Pope." Pope? Yeah, she's saying, "Pope says you gotta do it." "You don't want to float around for the rest of whatever, do you?" So she's got him, and it's great. Marry a Catholic. She's beautiful. But anyway, you gotta sympathize with your wife. You've got to identify with what's going on. And I do just that. First thing I get up in the morning, I throw up. That's right. And I sleep a lot. I wear suits that are too big for me, you know. I wear low heel shoes and I walk like this, you know. And I cry a lot, you know. But I'm copping out the last month. Ain't nobody getting me in that delivery room, I tell you what. I don't care what goes on. But let's talk about the baby for a second. Now, I've got to sympathize with the kid. You know, the woman is really, you know, she's in bad shape and everything. But, you know, that kid, man, is in a little room. It's a little teeny room, and it's humid in there, you know? And that's 9 months, man. That's a long time. And I think it would benefit both the parents and the child if we could work on something that would shorten it. The duration, that's what I'm talking about. I sent a letter to the Polaroid camera people. And I asked them to work on it, you know. I think 30 years from now, they'll come up with something. You kiss your wife, wait 10 seconds. You like it? Well, he's a little out of focus. Kiss again, that's all. He's got another one. If you like that one, you got to dip him in the lacquer, see? If you don't dip the kid in the lacquer, he'll fade on you. Mommy, mommy. But the whole thing is just that the baby's right there, and I know he must get tired. They've got to get tired, because it's a little place, man. Nothing to do in there, you know. Not a thing, man. You know, that's why the last couple of weeks they go crazy and start punching him. Tired of writing his name on the wall, you know. I tried to get my wife to swallow a ball so he'd have something to play with, you know. Oh, bounce it around, you know. The only interesting thing that ever happens to that kid is when the food comes down through the tube, you know. He can see that. Oh, that's nice. I like that. That's cute. Hey, get them Brussels sprouts out of here. I'm going to talk to you about driving, because I've had my problems, and I must tell you about my problems driving. First of all, in different cities. In Los Angeles, who puts up the dip signs out there? Does it make sense to put up a dip sign 2 inches before you get to the dip? You're driving the car, so what's the sign? The sign says dip. You want to help somebody, put it after you hit the dip, you know?
You've just hit a dip. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Now, in San Francisco, it's a different story. In San Francisco, they have these hills that have got to be the worst hills in the world to build a city around or in or on. It's fantastic. And it's not, it has nothing to do with shifting gears or anything. It's just that these hills are fantastic. They go straight up and straight down. And even with a high dramatic, I've worried at times. I've gone up to the top of some of these things. You get up to the top and the car's still going up. And you say, where's the land, for crying out loud? That's the only time I've ever stood up in the car. Where the hell's the land, for crying out loud? And then when I did go down, I went straight down like this. You know, you guys have put the brake on. Are you crazy? The back of the car flip over this way. And the insurance company won't cover you if you've had a head-on collision with a hill. I'll tell you that right now. They built a street up there called Lombard Street that goes straight down, and they're not satisfied with you killing yourself that way. They put grooves and curves and everything in it, and then they put flowers there where they've buried the people that have killed themselves. Yeah. Lombard Street, wonderful street. So, I had this Volkswagen. A guy lent me a Volkswagen. Now, I don't get along at all with a clutch. That's all there is to it. You don't even have to look for my car if you want to tell if I've been there. Just take a sniff and smell the clutch, that's all. I'll burn out a clutch in a minute. And first gear is not my best friend in the world, that's all. I get the hiccup, hawk, 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 you know. And, you know, the second gear is not too bad. Third is great. Once I get in the third, I'm not shifting back for nobody, that's all. I'll run over a guy before I have to go back in the first gear again. Forget it. Boy. So I'm driving around the city, and I had to take this hill because they put up a detour sign. So I said, well, if I'm going to take this hill, I'm really going to take it and get right over it, boy. And I gunned up the motor. Ah, 20, 60, 80. Brrr, I get up to the top. I'm ready to go over. I look to the right. Somebody put a stop sign up at the top of the hill. And I said, you got to be kidding. Nobody in his right mind puts a stop sign up at the top of a hill like this. I figured the city didn't do it. Some nut went out to the Army-Navy store, bought himself a stop sign, he's got a spyglass, looks through it, look, Martha, we caught somebody down there. So I'm caught, and I put the brake on. And I know if I'm in a hurry, I'm going to lose my right leg because all the blood's draining down to my hip. And I figured the time it takes me to get off of the brake and get to the accelerator will have drifted into the bay. And if you die that way, they won't let you into heaven. You go up, you see St. Peter, says, how'd you die? Me and a Volkswagen drifted backwards into the bays. You go to hell. So I said, I better give it a try. I look in the rearview mirror. Now there's a car behind me. Well, I don't want this guy to know I can't drive. So I said, come around, idiot, come around. He can't hear me because he's busy telling the guy behind him, come around, idiot, come around. They caught 13 million of us on that hill. And we all made an agreement. We put on the emergency brake and we turned it into a used car lot. That's all we did. I entered the service after I graduated high school because the dropouts already had the jobs. And I came out of the service and I came out of the service and I entered Temple University, 1960, physical education major. I hear you laughing. You know, a lot of people laugh at physical education. Aha, phys ed, you're dumb, you know. Well, anyway, I was pretty smart, and I got this girlfriend. I met this girl, very brilliant girl, had an IQ of about 300. 300,000 IQ. Got a philosophy major, man. Oh, she was fantastic. Used to walk around the house saying, why is there air? And I used to look at it. Any phys ed major knows why there's air. You know? There's air to blow up volleyballs, blow up basketballs. You know? You guys called me dumb for crying out loud. Walking around asking why there's air. But anyway, that's the thing to do when you're a freshman. Get yourself a brilliant girl to take care of you. She used to dress up like me and take my exams and everything. It's really beautiful. I bought a 1942 Dodge. For $75, my whole life savings from the service. And I used to drive from her house. I lived in Philadelphia. I used to drive to Trenton, 40-mile drive. And it was during the wintertime, and when I bought the car, it had four bald-headed tires. So I went out, and with the last couple of dollars I had, I bought a snow tire, and I put it on the right rear, and about 75 sandbags, you know, for traction, in case I get into some snow or ice or something, you know. Just dig right in on that right side, and a car would raise up on that one wheel. And I wrote Captain America on the side, because it was a beautiful car, man. It wouldn't go over 50. You go 51, it said, hey, cut it out. It's the kind of car I had, man. Beautiful. And I used to drive to her house, get to her house around 4 in the afternoon, and her parents, I think her parents wanted to get rid of her because as soon as I get there, they go upstairs, you know, and take the dog with them too, you know. They had one of these little dogs. They were very wealthy people. They had one of these little dogs in a house, about a 37,000-room house, and they had a dog was as big as my fist, you know, and for protection. You know, I said, well, people are kooky, man. Now, in Greenwich Village, I used to live in Greenwich Village, a guy with a one-room apartment and he had to use somebody else's bathroom would have a dog that's as big as a Mack truck. You know, like the dog would command him.
I must go. You know,
he had to take the dog out, man. He couldn't spank it, you know. He hit that dog would eat him alive, you know. Hey, listen, that's where we got our Doberman from, an old used master that he ate up. And these people with this big house got this dog so small. You know, what protection is it? You put your leg through the window, I know what it'll do. It'll pee all over the place. That's all they ever do, man. You come into anybody's house and say, rah, to one of those dogs, they poop all over everybody. I guess maybe that's the safety device, right? You feel something, hey, somebody's in the house. My leg's hurt. Ridiculous. Well, anyhow, I used to sit there, and we would do about 3 minutes worth of homework, and then we would cuddle up and start kissing. Oh, we would kiss for 12 hours, man. Just kiss everywhere. Kiss on the sofa, move to the TV set, kiss up on the whatnot shelf, you know, underneath the refrigerator, all over the place. We're just kissing. You kiss so long until the inside of the mouth gets raw, you know, and your lips swell up, and you say, listen, I think we better cut it out, all right? But tell you what, first one heals, call, all right? So I get in the old Captain America car, you know, and I'm driving. And the whole time we were kissing, it snowed and hail fell and everything, and the roads were frozen. So I'm driving, and very sleepy, and I get so sleepy that I go into a world of fantasy. You know, I'm really tired. I would like to sleep now, in another hour and a half drive, and it's ridiculous. And, well, listen, you take a little nap if you want. Are you kidding? Well, look, the road's going straight, and right now I got the car pointed straight. I don't see why I can't take a little nap right now. I better not do it. A leaf blew in front of the car. Oh, I've hit a cow. I'm driving. And I'll never forget it. I took it up to 50. I was living dangerously, you know. And I went into a bad right skid. Whack! And as soon as I went into the skid, I tried to remember the safe driving manual, you know, to save your life. If you go into a skid, the safe driving manual says, if you go into a skid, turn in the direction of the skid. Which doesn't make sense at all to me, because that's like if a guy throws a left hook at you, you lean into it, you know. Says, forget it, I'm turning left and hitting the brake. Whack! Wound up going down the road 50 miles an hour sideways. Which is a beautiful sight, by the way. You look out your front window and you see things going by like this, you know. And if you want, you just turn right around. You don't have to steer. Just look out the side door. You know? And if you have an accident, you can get out in a hurry, man. It can't hurt you. I love it. Like, they ever build cars like that. And I hit a tree. As soon as I hit the tree, I remembered I'm in trouble because in my glove compartment, I've got 10 old moving violation tickets, which are like savings bonds. The longer you keep them, the greater they mature, you know. And I figure I owe the city about $2 million. I know they're going to throw me in jail for life. So I push the car away from the tree, and I try and move it, wah, 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 and it won't move it at all because the A-frame has fallen out, see? Well, I didn't know what an A-frame was until I took it to a mechanic, and, you know, oh, your A-frame's falling out. Cost you $1 million. And that's the labor, you know, that kind of. So I'm trying to move, wah, 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 and it won't, and I'm scared because the cops are gonna catch me. I gotta get out of here somehow, you know. Up comes the safety for all truck driver, gets out of the car. I didn't even ask him to help me. Starts to put 20 flares around the car. What the hell do you think? This is my birthday or something? Have you ever tried to blow out a flare? Now I'm sore on the outside and the inside, you know. All right, now the beautiful thing are the cops. Here come, and they get out, and they look at the thing, and the motor's in the front seat, tree's leaning on a 45-degree angle, bark's all chewed out of it, and the tires are all flat, and 20 flares around the car, and this guy says, what happened? I said, well, I was driving along, and this tree jumped right out of the forest and bit my car, boy. They'd ask you that, no matter what. You could run over a guy and leave him under the car, and the guy's, all right, what happened? Oh, well, the guy was sleeping, and he was cold, and I had nothing to cover him up, so I figured I'd use the car, you know? I'd protect him from something. Ridiculous, boy. Thank you. This is a true story. Happened to me in San Francisco. I had a tooth pulled at 9 o'clock in the morning. And the dentist gave me Novocaine and everything. And around 5, I went into great pain in that area. I'd like to say a few words about Novocaine versus pain. First of all, Novocaine does not kill pain. It postpones it and gives it a chance to build little pain buddies over to the side, you know.
About 5 o'clock, we're going to kill that hole over there.
Well, I'll tell you, man, I really started to suffer, and I couldn't stop it because the dentist, he was, you know, he had left the office, and I had nothing. I just had to just sit there, and I know I can't take certain things because I have to go to work. Can't take codeine because it'll make me drowsy, stuff like that. So I'm working on aspirin and stuff like that, APCs, and there's nothing. I'm still boom, 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 headache, pain, fatigue, everything. And then I remembered those commercials where they interview the people, you know, and they say, sir, have you ever, tell us about your headache. Have you ever had one? Have I? Christ! One time, it ate my foot right off. Just spit it right off, and then it killed my kneecap, boy. And I took two of them pills there and put the toes back and the kneecaps back, and I'm wonderful. And I went out and I bought a bottle of that stuff, you know, and I took 12 of them. And I waited 4 weeks. Nothing. Excess stomach acid, that's right. So I'm sitting there feeling sorry for myself. I got 2 hours before I go to work, and I know I can't call up the boss and say get a replacement because, you know, 2 hours is not enough. And I'm just sitting there feeling sorry for myself. And in comes my landlord's wife, and she says, listen, you got a toothache. I didn't know. She said, you had it pulled. I said, yeah. She said, you're having pain. Yes. Whew. She said, well, did you take this? Yes, I took this. Did you take that? Yes, I took all those things. And I'm still miserable. She said, well, here, why don't you take my two Midol tablets? I said, don't fool around with me, please. And besides, you got the wrong gender and everything. Get out of here, no jokes. She said, no, I'm serious. Why don't you take them? Well, the pain just kept up. So I looked at it, and it just got so bad. I said, look, give me the two pills, and don't tell anybody, all right? I took them, you know, and I went back, and 10 minutes passed, and the pain went away. And I tried to make the pain come. Nothing. It was beautiful. I've got an hour to go to work, and the pain's gone. My doll did it. Good old my doll. And I said, listen, this is great. Give me another one, because this one may wear off. You know, I need one for the second show. She said, I don't have any more. I said, what, are you some kind of junkie dealer or something? You want $100? I'll give you $100. Give me the my doll, would you please? She said, I really don't have any more, but you can get them at the drugstore. I said, okay, I know where to get them, you know. And I ran into the drugstore. I was so happy, man. I said, hey, druggist, come here. Give me a can of Midol, and it's for me. And the druggist said, I don't give a darn. There's a lot of weird guys come in here every day, you know. But I want you to know that, boy, I took them all night long, and no pain. It didn't come back or nothing. And in the morning, I had a little headache. I took one for that, and gone. That stuff is beautiful. And you women don't tell anybody about it, man. Keep all the goodies to yourself. And I tell you, fellas, there's nothing wrong with me. My voice is no higher than it used to be. Well, that's the truth. Of course, every 28 days, I get a little irritable. I played football for Temple University, and it's the truth, see? Don't keep asking me, did you really play? Yes, I really played. At one time, I had a beautiful body. I weighed 192 pounds, and they made me a fullback. Now, before you start tuning up, let me get my story finished. No, the truth of the matter is that it didn't take much to play for Temple at the time that I was playing, because we had lost 27 games in a row, and we played against real weak teams. I mean, teams like Muhlenberg, Lafayette, what's it? Gettysburg, yeah. They all beat us. They all killed us. Especially Hofstra. Hofstra beat us 900-0 in their street clothes, man. They wiped us out. You know? Vassar wouldn't even play us. That's how bad we were, man. Get out of here. We don't even want you on our schedule. So I want to give you some insight as to what goes on in a loser's locker room. We're going to play against Hofstra, which is a really terrible school. They killed us every year, boy. And when you play for a team like Temple, you got nothing to do except pace up and down in the locker room, and you say to yourself, boy, I sure do hope I don't get hurt. I almost made a tackle last week. I must have been crazy out there or something. Nobody else is trying out there. I don't know why I got to be the one all the time. I play on the second team, which is actually the nut squad. Now, these are guys that can play, but they're afraid. They don't want to go out there, so they do nutty things, like they put the helmet on sideways, looking out through the ear hole. Guys got on scuba diving suits, snowshoe, and an ice skate, you know, walking around. Second team is very quiet because they're going to go out, scared to death. That's what they are. Catholics on the squad always seem to have something special going because they're over in the corner. Domino's, Father, please, organize it. I'm not Catholic, but I figure if it works for him. Yeah, me too, Father. He's a friend of mine. He told me how to do this. Yeah, please accept me. Yeah, and we're pacing up and down. First team's getting last rites. And we're warm. The coach is drawing trick plays on the blackboard because he has no personnel whatsoever, and he knows he's got to work with something that'll trick him, you know. All right, you guys, listen up. When they come out of the huddle, line up backwards.
and just let them run right over you, and then we'll raise the flag and everything while you're singing the national anthem, all right? We'll get pity somewhere, I'll tell you that. Then comes the athletic director.
Said, I'd like to talk to the boys.
What?
I'd like to talk to the boys.
Okay. May I have your attention, please, fellas? This is the athletic director, Mr. Ernie Cassell. This is the man that's responsible for giving most of you the scholarships. He'd like to talk to you, Mr. Cassell.
Thank you very much, Coach Macris. Well, boys, here we are again. We're going out and have another fine football game. Going to go out and play against Hofstra, because you already know that. You know, they beat us last year 900-0. The year before that, they beat us 900-0. I was over in their locker room, had a chance to look at some of their players, and Christ, they're bigger than they were last year. Yes, yes, I know. Fellas, I looked out in the stands, we only have 12 people out there. And this is homecoming. Just want to say a few words to you. This is our first game on television. We want to keep this television contract going because this is the only way we can make some money to buy little scuba diving suits and snowshoes and ice skates for all the weird old squads here. So we're going to say to you, please, remember that you're on TV. By that, I mean, don't worry about winning the game as much as we want you to be concerned with the fact that while you're out there on the field, we're going to ask you, please, do not touch certain areas of your bodies while you're out there on a football field. Because if you're out there digging and scratching, people at home are going to turn you right off, and we're going to lose the contract. So please, do not touch certain areas of your bodies while you're out there on the field. Now, we're going to pass out these affidavits and ask you to sign them, saying that you will not touch certain areas of your bodies while you're out there on a football field, all right? So we signed them, and we went out, you know, and I'm with the second team, and first team's got the ninth time for last right. Hofstra came out of the locker room. I had never seen guys so big before in my life. They had just brought 11 guys with them. Smallest guy on the squad was 6'1", 490 pounds. He was a halfback. Ran 100 and 9-1, had long teeth hanging out of his mouth. Every one of them just had one eye in the center of the forehead. The coach was beating them out onto the field with a ball and chain, hitting them smack in the back of the head. Get out of here! Come on, Igor. What's good, Igor? First team said, oh, God, don't look at him. If you don't look at him, you won't get scared. Second team went crazy. Oh, guys are ripping their clothes off. I can't play naked. Ah! Kicker comes up, grabs the ball. It looks like a vitamin pill in his hand. Puts it down. They come running down the field, first thing to throw some meat at them. Maybe they'll eat that. Get out of here. First thing again, we run a play. There's a pile of dust. 11 Hofstra guys still standing. 11 people men out cold on the ground. Coach said, all right, get the nut squad, naked or not, get out there. We're carrying them off, and as we're carrying them off, I swear I heard one temple guy on the ground say, can we get up now? No, you move, I'll punch you right in the mouth. So help me, get out of here. We carry them off, and the coach says, all right, get out there, second team, let's go. We got a quarterback that's 2-1.
All right, run the kamikaze play on one, all right? Kamikaze. Cosby up the middle, the whole team off the field. Break!
The quarterback goes up and says, ship, one, two, bing, gives me the ball. I take one step and I look, and there's a hole. And I had never seen a hole playing for Temple. And I said, God, a hole. I turned to the people in the stands, look at this, a hole. You see this? He said, yeah, hurry up, run. I said, wait a minute, it may be a mirage. You can't tell. I said, well, I better get moving. I'll never forget it. It was a big hole with a defensive man on the ground. I planted one foot, stepped over him. When I did, he stood up and hit me. And the pain
was tremendous. And I threw down the ball, and I said, oh. I've been hit in the...
You'd better not touch any areas of your bodies while you're on the football field.
So I grabbed my head. And I said, oh, Jesse, what's the matter? I said, I can't say nothing until they bring a commercial on, all right? Thank you and good night.